This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show. Our mission is to serve you and empower you so you make better financial decisions in your life. Today, I have to add a warning to my advice about choosing a financial advisor or planner. There are fiduciaries that are slipping through a loophole to sell products I consider to be terrible, and I'm going to tell you what to look out for. On a more positive note, I'm also going to talk about areas where there's huge job growth right now, even as the U.S. economy slows and the number of layoffs rising. So, you'll hear me talk about why, if you feel like you need professional advice on how to handle your money, your investments, to plan for your future, I always talk about only hire a fiduciary. A fiduciary is someone who enters into a legal agreement with you that your interests come first. Well, it's recently come to our attention. There are people who are representing themselves as fiduciaries and then turning around and selling commission insurance products to you, heavily tilting towards annuities and variable universal life. And the way they're doing it is unbelievable. And it's why anytime somebody is selling you an insurance product, know that when they are selling you an insurance product, they are not operating as a fiduciary unless they are doing something very rare, selling commission free insurance products, commission free. Now, let me tell you, Krista, who is a brilliant mind and more patient than I am, you have been reading some of these agreements from people who are saying they are a fiduciary and then they're selling commission insurance products. And what did you find?
I find that if you go to, say, their website, there are two separate entities that they are working for. And those entities, it will say in the legal terms on the website that they have no affiliation whatsoever.
So the same individual who is meeting with you under the corporate umbrella of operating as a fiduciary will also then turn around and wear a different hat with a different entity, a different corporate entity, and then sell you, after they've given you the fiduciary advice, then turn around and with a separate entity that says it's not related to the first one, will sell you commission insurance garbage. Various forms of ultra-high commission annuities or some various forms of ultra-high commission universal life, variable universal life, junk life. Just remember, universal life, variable universal life equals junk. Just remember that. Annuities, there are rare exceptions where an annuity could be useful. I would say potentially an immediate payout annuity or a longevity annuity, things that are so rarely sold by commission insurance people that you can't find them selling them because they have virtually zero commissions. There's no money in it for them. What do they sell? They sell various flavors of indexed annuities, fixed index annuities, various named annuities. But the latest trick of the trade I'm seeing now in advertising is something really clever. They come up with these marketing names for annuities and insurance that never use the word annuities or insurance. And then you have to go down and read the legal description to see that what they're calling these made-up names actually are these products that I'm telling you to stay away from. So just know the line of demarcation is commissions. Commissions. Someone who is selling you stuff on commissions is not a fiduciary. And to me, it's even more scary that somebody would hold themselves out to be a fiduciary with one hat, change hats, and then there's not operating as a fiduciary and operating as a commission salesperson. So if you're asked to sign two agreements, that's the tip-off from two different corporate entities. That's the tip-off that somebody is pretending to be something they are really not. Because the doing things the right way as a fiduciary is where they start, and then they cross to the dark side.
Okay, we'll go to questions now. This is from Cheryl in Ohio. After hearing you say Fidelity offers over 4% interest on cash reserves, I called to transfer my traditional IRA to them. When Fidelity explained that it's a money market account and is not guaranteed to not lose money, I was a bit confused. Is this a safe investment for my cash reserves?
For cash reserves. Okay, wonderful question and one that is confusing. All right. So a money market fund that has a fixed share price of a dollar a share is incredibly safe. It does not have FDIC insurance. Don't worry, because if you go into a Fidelity money market account that is a U.S. Treasury fund or a government securities fund, and this would also be true at Vanguard or Schwab, the big three of financial houses in the United States that are not full commission brokerages. You don't want to be with a full commission brokerage. Any bank-related brokerage, don't want to be with. You will be earning in this general territory 4.7% fixed share price, and you'll be in the safest of all securities, which is treasuries or government securities. And it is, if you're in a regular money market fund, that is set at a dollar share price, it is as safe could be. There were problems, when was it? Was it 12, 15 years ago? I'm trying to remember. There was one money fund that had some problems, and it looked like people might lose 1% of their money.
Don't they call that breaking the buck?
Breaking the buck. And there were new rules put into place, and then continuing tightening of the regulations that have made it ultra safe for people buying the dollar a share fund. So I have my money in them, although I actually have my money in a tax-free municipal, because if you're at a higher tax bracket, that's a better place to be. And I sleep well at night knowing that these obligations are ultra short term and I'm not worried about them breaking the buck. As I read a recent article about this, I thought it was very interesting. It was like, yeah, so they'd probably not be able to keep that promise if there was nuclear war. And isn't it funny how I say, you know, the end of the earth is the end of the earth, right, but nothing else is. Mm-hmm. Nuclear war would be the one circumstance I could tell you that none of these rules apply. Other than that, you're fine in the Fidelity cash reserves money fund at a dollar a share price.
Karen in Ohio says, I heard in a recent podcast that a listener was having trouble with their elderly mom who lived by herself and answered all of the phone calls, including scam calls. Clark's advice was to get her to not answer the phone unless she knew who it was that was calling. I had a similar problem with my mom, but I just couldn't get her to not answer her phone. After she was really shaken up by a grandma phone scam where the scammer said my son was in a terrible car wreck, and then another scammer said her social security number was compromised, we had to do something. We got a call blocker for her phone, and then she lists the one that she got.
Digitone Pro Series 2 call blocker. I'm going to look that up.
That only lets pre-programmed phone numbers ring through. It's been a lifesaver since her friends and family can call, but she no longer gets scam calls. I thought our experience may help other listeners with older parents who just have to answer the phone.
Okay, it's sold out right now at Amazon, but there are a number of others listed that range from $40 on up. Gosh, there are several that do this. Most effective spoof caller, this one says. Call blocker for landline phones. Panasonic has one. Landline phone call blocker with dual mode protection. These work two ways. One, and the one you're talking about, I'm looking right now. What it does is it's a permissive system, which means that only calls from known that you've registered in the system, known family members and friends, those numbers come through. All others are blocked from ringing on the phone. And the device, this is for home phone service, the device will say call blocked or something similar, and it's a caller ID device as well. This is a great suggestion. I appreciate it very much, and something that I will recommend in the future, because it is a better solution than me saying, if you don't recognize the number, just don't answer. This is technology preventing the temptation when that phone rings of picking it up when it is not from a known family member or friend.
And maybe give, in that case, if you're doing that, you would probably want her doctor's offices and other people to have like your number to call for reminders, pharmacy.
That's a great suggestion.
Things like
although
that.
That would be a known party. You could put that kind of thing on the list. And the one that you're talking about, the Digitone Pro Series 2, just not available right now. The ratings on these are all from really good to excellent. So this is a tool that people have been using that I should have known about, but did not till now, which is what the whole idea of all of us being part of Team Clark is all about.
For sure. This is from Cheryl in Texas. Clark, I've heard you say adding a person to your credit card as an authorized user without giving them a physical card will help them establish credit. I'd like to know if this approach will help someone with repairing credit that's already established but is damaged.
So adding a card that shows a good payment record, good history, will help less in a situation with someone who has damaged credit they're repairing, but it will help. It will not be the enormous booster shot that it would be for someone with no credit, but it will also be of some amount of help to someone who has credit that needs repairing. If someone's really, really in a tough spot with a lot of charge-offs, maybe collections, things like that on their credit, I don't want to make it sound like this will suddenly give a clean, wonderful picture. It will not. It will be a marginal assistance. No credit individuals benefit mightily. People with damaged credit benefit in a minor kind of way. So I'm glad you asked the question, because I've never addressed that aspect of this. What helps with damaged credit? Time. Because if you have had charge-offs, they vanish from your credit typically in 6 years, 9 months, they are gone. The legal statute says 7 years, but the credit bureaus tend to do 6 years, 9 months just to make sure they're within that 7 year window. Or if your finances improve over time, being able to pay those off. But even if you're not 7 years out from charge-offs, time heals those before the 7 years. Doesn't eliminate them, but your credit score starts to rise just naturally because there's been no new items that have been in charge-off status. Coming next, though, on a positive note, let's do something positive here.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the job market. And there's clear geographical indicators where the best job opportunities are in America right now, far and away. And I'm going to tell you those spots.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're going through a clear rotation in jobs in the United States. I think about how over the decades, where the hot job markets has been, has rotated from one part of the country to another. There was once a time that the biggest magnet for workers in the United States was the Midwest and upper Midwest. And then starting about 40 years ago, jobs started migrating out of the Midwest and upper Midwest to other parts of the country, most particularly the Southeast United States plus Texas. And that pattern has continued, but only magnified with the top job markets in the United States overwhelmingly being in the South. And there's new data out on this, developed under contract for the Wall Street Journal by Moody's Analytics. And Moody's is a very respected financial research organization, and found that of the top 10 job markets in the United States, they're all in the South. One of them is an exception. Number 9 on the list of 10 is Salt Lake City, Utah. And the Salt Lake Valley from Ogden to Provo has been a massively strong job market for decades now, and population growth as well. But the other 9 are all in the South. Number 1 strongest job market in the United States, and has the traffic to prove it, Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville's job market is intensely strong, with companies begging for workers, begging. And the pay levels, the South historically, the diss on the South was that pay levels were pathetic. No longer true. Pay rates are rising across the markets I'm going to share with you because the shortage of workers is so severe. Number 2 on the list is what many people would have thought I said would be number 1, Austin, Texas. 3, Jacksonville, Florida, followed by Dallas, Raleigh, North Carolina, Atlanta in 6th place, Orlando in 7th, Charlotte, North Carolina in 8th, Salt Lake, I already mentioned to you, in 10th place, Miami. Although I would say that's a trailing indicator because Miami is having a bit of trouble on the job front right now because Miami had gone all in on crypto and a lot of those jobs had evaporated. In fact, one of their sports venues had the name of, they have FTX on it. I'm trying to remember, Krista. They had one of the cryptos on it that's in bankruptcy now.
Oh, boy.
And so they have to come up with a new name for the arena. But Miami had gone all in more than any other metro in the United States on crypto. They rode that wave for a while, and like surfers who are on a good wave and then they crash, they fall. That's kind of what Miami's doing right now. But other than this blip from crypto, Miami continues to be a strong market. So this is a normal process in the United States. And it's happened all through history that Americans, unlike people in many other countries, have been migratory birds. And we have gone to where the food is. In this case, I'm using that as, is that called a simile? Referring to migrating birds hunting for food?
I missed it because I was looking up the arena, which was FTX.
I was right about FTX. Sorry. Thank you for fact checking me up to the second. So the job market is just doing what it's always done, is at various phases in American history, people born one place pick up and move somewhere else for opportunity. And right now it's happening in these cities. The other thing with these cities is they all, including Salt Lake, is the only non-Southern representative on this Moody's list. They all had affordable housing, and they don't anymore. The migration, the in-migration has been so fast that these markets, many of these markets, are on another top 10 list, and that's where home prices have risen the fastest over the last 3, 5, or 10 years in the country. Think about Austin, that the home prices went crazy, unbelievable increases in houses. And I remember talking with both my brothers lived in Austin, Texas at different times in their lives. And my older brother bought a home there long ago, and he told me what he paid for it. And I remember that home. And it was like nothing. It was less than what people pay for an economy, new economy car right now.
Wow.
He just laughs because the homes are so crazy expensive there now. So the affordable housing quotient as part of this is not in play right now. And in many of these metros, that part of it isn't present. But the migration continues because the job picture is so very bright.
Okay, time for questions. This is from David in Oregon. He says, my most recent car purchase was in January of 2007 for a new car, so it's been a while. I plan to buy another new car in the next few months. My understanding is that car purchasers are typically asked or required to agree to binding arbitration if they have a post-sale dispute with the dealership. Of course, we know that the deck is stacked in favor of the dealership in these binding arbitration events. My question is it possible to buy a new car without agreeing to the binding arbitration? I suspect the salesperson and other people at the dealership may try to tell me that it's required, but if I insist that I will not agree to binding arbitration under any circumstances, will they finally blink and agree to sell me the car without me agreeing to the binding arbitration? If it's relevant, I do have the money available to pay cash for the vehicle.
So first of all, cash is a weak argument for you with the dealer, not a strength. Don't even bring that up. Dealerships are overwhelmingly owned by chains or mega chains. There's almost no dealerships left in America that are one dealership owned by one individual. They're all part of local, regional, or national clusters. And they all do this very bureaucratic thing. And the people at the dealership level would have no authority to waive or change the arbitration agreement. Now, why do they all do binding arbitration? Just like in every other industry we do business with now, they're all doing these stack deck kangaroo court binding arbitrations that no matter what, you're going to lose. It is because the U.S. Supreme Court repeatedly, going back, I think, to the 1920s, maybe, I think this infestation of arbitration started long ago. I have no problem with arbitration that is voluntary. I have no problem with arbitration if the arbitration was a fair forum. But the way arbitration is practiced in corporate America today, there are no fair arbitrations whatsoever. Not a single scintilla of a chance that there's such a thing as an arbitration that is fair to consumers. And you know that because businesses win in many of these arbitrations arbitration forums just a whisker below 100% of the time. So I get your spirit here. It is just something that is a plague of modern life. And until and unless we have a Congress that's not bought and sold for by political contributions, by corporate America, we will be stuck in this web of this horrific binding arbitration. And you are Don Quixote tilting at windmills. And this is one that you should just put up with it and know that if something does go wrong and the dealer does something egregious, there's really nothing you can do about it unless there's state consumer authorities that would come after a dealership for doing abusive things.
This is from Mark in Nevada. Regarding HELOCs, I recently...
You say Nevada, I say Nevada.
I know. I recently had an unexpected medical bill of around $20,000
that I'm sorry.
That I used a credit card to pay for. Rather than using my emergency fund, I acquired a HELOC for $50,000. The interest rate on the HELOC was less than what I was getting on my emergency fund, so it seemed like a good way to access cash to recover the credit card expenses. My house is worth approximately $900,000 and is mortgage-free. Also, the unused credit on my HELOC could bolster my credit score. Was this a bad move, in your opinion?
Mark, the circumstances you gave me, I would be an idiot to say that it was a bad move on your part. I mean, here you are with $900,000 in equity in a home, no debt at all other than this small HELOC. In your case, I mean, this is just a smart financial decision, where in most cases, you would hear me say, no, 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 don't use a HELOC. In your case, for the third of Americans that are mortgage debt free, you own their homes free and clear, having a standby HELOC, or in the way you're using a HELOC here, where it's not for improving the house, it's just almost like a financial planning instrument on your part, and you're not lacking in equity, you're not lacking in money, I think what you're doing is just fine. And the reason I'm saying all these caveats is I say over and over again, never, ever use a HELOC for any purpose other than to improve your home or for something for your home. And in this case, Mark, you are the exception to never, never, not ever.
John in South Carolina says, can you give us the name or website of the place where you bought man-made diamonds for your wife? What size diamonds were they? Can you get them in white, gold, or gold? Thanks for your help.
So, you're talking about the setting for the diamond in white, gold, or
gold, I guess.
There are so many of them now. Gosh, we bought from Brilliant Earth. We bought from, what's the one De Beers owns? Lightbox. Lightbox Jewelry. They're all over the place now. And the price of lab-created diamonds is declining very, very rapidly, what you have to pay for them to buy them. The price spread between lab-created and dug-out-of-the-earth diamonds is much larger than it used to be. And the larger the stone you look at, the greater the gap now with lab-created versus dug-out-of-the-earth diamonds. But you look at sellers now, and many traditional jewelers who would never be caught dead selling lab-created are now offering consumers both choices, dug out of the earth diamonds or lab created. Just so you're aware, the lab createds are chemically identical to dug out of the earth. This isn't some kind of inferior kind of thing. They are identical. You just get much more for your money with what you buy. After the fact, if you want to sell a diamond, any diamond, a dug out of the earth or a lab created, the value you can get is way below what you paid for it. But lab created diamonds have a marking on them is the only way a jeweler can tell they're lab created. And those have even worse value in the resale market than dug out of the earth. But up front, the gap is giant.
I'm looking at these huge lab grown diamond, 4-carat total weight, round, brilliant, solitaire stud earrings.
So 2-carat, 3,700, so $1,850 a carat for
earrings.
Yeah.
$2,200
for
these 2-carat, beautiful.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. For, well, it's, yeah.
2-carat each year.
Yeah, 2-carat each year.
That's so cheap.
Yeah, so this is on lightboxjewelry.com.
And then look at these loose diamonds here. What do we have here? Let's see. And do they give you sizes?
There's a 2-carat one for 1600 round brilliant diamond.
And so they're a tiny fraction of the cost. 1 carat, 800.
Yeah.
And these are gorgeous diamonds. I mean, they are just beautiful. One thing we've had debate about over the years, and I believe very strongly, you include your intended and make sure that your intended is comfortable with having a lab-created diamond versus a dug-out-of-the-earth diamond. Many people in their 20s don't want what they call them blood diamonds. Is that right?
Right, yeah.
Blood diamonds, because of the issues involving war and exploitation of children and mines. And they prefer the lab created for those reasons, not the money reasons. But this is an incredible way, John, to save money. And I know that traditionalists in the jewelry business just get so upset with me every time I talk about this with such enthusiasm. But you ask my wife how she feels. It'd be great to have her talk about how she was like. I remember when I first brought up this idea years ago, she was like, "You want to get me a what?" And now she's like, "Let me tell you, this is the only way to buy diamonds." She'll
Absolutely.
Say that right now.
I feel that way too.
Because they're spectacularly beautiful and they're such a deal. And you know I love my deals. Thanks so much for joining us today, whether you're driving, walking, working out, or however you like to listen our podcast or watch our video edition of the podcast, I truly appreciate you being a part of Team Clark.